up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. My co-host, of course, is Thomas Drance. He covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics, working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Lots going on today. It's a Canucks game day. It's a crossover Wednesday. Jason Buchla is going to join us. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy.
Also, we're making plans for the 2035 season of Canucks Talk.
God willing.
I think the new 12-year deal for Rodgers and the NHL announced today.
Pretty amazing. You were Jim Nantz.
Well, look, and there are obviously far-reaching implications of that deal. I mean, it's a massive deal, a fair bit of risk taken on by the NHL itself by committing to a 12-year deal in a world where, you know, these streamers are just getting involved, right? And the landscape is changing so rapidly. it's an expensive bet by our benefactors, but also one that I think is probably long-sighted given what we've seen with rights pricing around the globe. But what it does for sure help with, you know, and this is slowly happening, all of the reasons for cap pessimism are like slowly drifting away, except for the tariff thing, but
yes.
Whatever.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, the markets are reacting as if that's much ado about nothing this afternoon in the Rose Garden. So hopefully that's signal. You've got an appetite on both sides for labor continuity.
Labor peace.
Yeah, labor peace. You've got a Canadian rights deal now fixed. You've got a global economy that, you know, it's been a little bit uncertain of late, but certainly there's no ruptures on our radar like the pandemic. And yeah, I mean, that just helps lock in some certainty that the cap may continue to climb, perhaps at an unprecedented rate. It legitimately drives hockey-related revenue, right? And, you know, that's going to have significant implications for the Canucks. Not to mention, of course, that the Canucks will benefit themselves from a league-wide rights deal. Right. And I think, you know, given some of the line items that this team, I think, hasn't made enough progress on, practice facility, right? Rick Tocchet's extension, there's reason to spend. And I think fewer reasons, although there never were valid ones anyway, for fans to expect this club to carry itself like a big market team.
Fewer reasons for them not to expect it or to accept it. Accept.
More reasons to expect.
More reasons to expect.
Yeah.
There we go. We figured
it out. Fewer reasons to accept.
Fewer reasons to accept.
Correct.
Yes. There we go. We got there. And I'm making the joke about the 2035 edition of Canucks Talk. This does not improve our job security at all. So fingers crossed. We get a few more years out of this at some point here.
Hey, if we're still doing Canucks Talk in 2035, something has gone terribly
wrong. I was going to say, that's actually probably not a good sign for us. Like, wow, we've been doing this for a long time. We are locked in. We have hit our peak.
Hey, I'll take it, man. You want to spend a decade correcting, accept or expect? I'm here with you.
Whatever, 4 or 5 years in already, so I'm halfway there. As mentioned, it's Canucks game day. They host the Kraken tonight at Rogers Arena. And we'll hear from Rick Tocchet later. We heard from him yesterday after practice, you know, calling these, hey, every game is a game seven. Basically, that's how you have to look at it. Today, he said, don't get caught up scoreboard watching. Don't think about how many wins you need out of the remaining eight. Just focus on winning the game tonight. And they are still in that moment where, mathematically alive, that's the attitude I completely understand that you have to have going into these games. But it's also that weird situation where, you know, you could win seven of your final eight games and it still might not be enough to make the playoffs. So an interesting stretch of the schedule here coming up starting tonight against Seattle for the Canucks.
Yeah, and let's get the crossover boys in. But I think more than anything, every loss that you avoid, right, permits you to continue to live in a world where this might have a happy ending, right? Every loss you avoid prevents the death march.
Yes. And let's all try to avoid the death march. All right. For more on that and a lot of stuff going on around the Canucks right now, let's go to the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They join us every Wednesday. You can watch them on Donnie and Dhali Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. And as I said, they join us every Wednesday for the crossover. Rick, Don, how you guys doing?
Hey, good.
Good, good, guys.
So are you holding out hope? I can bet of the two of you, I can bet who's holding out more hope for the Canucks playoff chances. I'm going to bet Rick.
Well, it's Rick.
Yeah.
It's Rick.
Hey, should I be criticized for being positive?
Or I wasn't.
I could be who
criticized?
Like Thomas.
Who criticized? I just said you're probably
like
holding out hope.
Hey, yeah. Well, just be realistic, man. Well, just be realistic and authentic. Don't worry about positive or negative. Just tell us what you really think.
You know,
positive positive or negative, that's for fans, man. I want to know what you think.
Yeah, well, they don't got a snowball's chance in hell.
Well, that didn't take long. We just had to say, no, tell us what you really think. Well, there you go. There's the positive take on your Vancouver Canucks going into the Seattle Kraken tonight.
There you go.
Well, all right. With that out of the way, I guess we can deal with some of the other things going on right now.
What a start. This is going to be a good crossover.
We're firing on all cylinders already. I think the biggest... I mean, there's a lot going on, but probably the number one item of conversation right now is Rick Tocchet's future. And he was asked about it yesterday and again said, hey, that's going to be a private thing. There's going to have to be a conversation after the season. And that's now a lot of times that we've heard from Drantz, from Friedman, from Saravalli, and now from Tocchet himself, the idea of we need to talk about the direction of this team after the season. We need to have that conversation. What do you guys read into that when you hear that? You know, it's not just about the money. It's not that. But there needs to be some very high-level conversations between Rick Tocchet and management before he's willing to commit to a new deal here.
They haven't got a snowball's chance in hell of signing Rick Tocchet. It's just everything just happens so fast. Like everything is just like it just seems like yesterday. Yeah. With you know they were taking Edmonton to you know seven games and the one goal loss and everything was wine and roses in the off season and now we're talking about them not making the playoffs. I'm agreeing with Rick here and Rick Tocchet's future, yeah. The Adams Award winner, Adams Award winner, it being up in the air, like my head's spinning. It's spinning at most, you know, and if you watch the show, it's spinning a lot in most cases, but even more so now. I don't know what to expect, but guys, we've talked about it on the show before. What does Quinn Hughes think?
Yeah.
Does he want Rick Tocchet back? Because that would be my number one question. If that's the case, then get him back. Do what you can.
Well, two things are going to happen, guys. Either he signs a long-term deal or the Canucks are going to pick up the option and he's going to come back as a lame duck coach. But I don't see any situation where he would be happy being forced to coach next year. No coach is going to want a one-year deal. Coaches' contracts that are ending, they want, what do they want? Security, term, money. He just won the Coach of the Year. You know, he just won the Coach of the Year award for crying out loud. They did the option year with Boudreaux. It was a disaster. Mm-hmm. So it was a disaster. You know, he came back 1 year. He didn't, what did he last till Christmas or a little bit shortly after there? And why would the Canucks want an unhappy coach for 1 year? And the other one is, I suppose he could always, if he doesn't want to do the 1 year,
TNT.
Donnie nailed it. He could quit and go to TNT and do that for a year. If the Canucks can't come up with the money now for Tocchet, how are they going to come up with the money for Tocchet next year in 12 months?
$7.7 billion.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if he has a good year next year. But your original question, Jamie, this is going to be dollars and cents. Don't kid yourself. But the other big part of the Tocchet is going to be the Canucks are going to have to articulate a plan to Rick on how they're going to be competitive every year. This guy's coming from Pittsburgh where he won two cups and he had a superstar that knows how to act like a superstar in Sidney Crosby. Right. And, you know, they got a practice facility there. They got, you know, that's a top run. That's where this guy came from. And maybe he needs to know from the Canucks How are you guys going to run a top program? Maybe that's a key,
too. Yeah, and guys, one of the things that really sticks out for me, and I know, Thomas, you've talked about this before, is Patrick Helvin, when he said, I believe it was in January, Rick, where he said something to the effect of, well, it takes two sides here.
That's it.
And the hint there was that, you know, maybe Rick Tocchet doesn't like what he's seeing with this organization, doesn't like Beam. Maybe he doesn't like, he says he likes living in Vancouver, I believe him, but doesn't like the direction. Rick, you made a good point about the practice facility.
Oh.
They're one of only two teams in the NHL that doesn't have a practice facility.
Absolutely.
The other one is Calgary. That's getting taken care of there.
Yeah, it's not.
And so, I mean, it seems like it might seem like a little thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. And I think it's a pain in the ass. You know, you're practicing at Rogers one day, you're practicing at UBC the next. You know what's going on with other teams. Does it affect performance? There's a lot of things there that you might not like as a head coach.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, Rick doesn't just come from Pittsburgh, right? So he's seen what it looks like when you work for an organization like the Penguins. He's seen what it looks like when you work for an organization like the Arizona Coyotes, right? I mean, the idea of a plan and stability, the Canucks obviously would not fall on that to that extreme, where the Coyotes were more laundromat than hockey team, of course. But, you know, if anyone has a sense of what organizational stability and vision and the value of it would be, you'd think Rick Tocchet, based on the last decade of experience that he's had in the league, might be front of line. Rick, one thing about coaches when they often work out their lame duck seasons that I have talked about in the past is the idea of misaligned incentives, right? Where what this team might need is like to play young guys, but what the coach needs is to earn a long-term deal or at least make the case for their next contract. So you end up with like the club's interests and middle management's interests in opposition. In this case, you know, given sort of Operation Keep Quinn Hughes and the stakes of next season, I actually wonder if a one-year deal might better suit Rick Tocchet. Like, is there a path to do a deal where he gets a top-up and maybe they agree to a mutual option after the first year? Like, on some level, I almost wonder if the interests align to take like another one-year shot on this. What do you think about that?
I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that he would be doing cartwheels about a one-year deal. Thomas, he just won the Coach of the Year last year. His contract's up.
No, he's got he should have
want?
Leverage
security.
And he should use it. But are you sure you want security if you don't know what this team looks like beyond next season?
Can I throw something in here when it comes to – does he seem happy? Like does he want – if he signs another one-year deal and this same sort of stuff happens, does he really want to – at this stage of his life, I don't know how much money he has. I don't know what the situation is with him personally. But does he really want to go through this again, another one-year deal, things start out poorly, and he's getting asked the same questions left and right? Rick Tocchet comes across, Thomas, like the nicest guy in the world. He really does, to me anyway. Just seems like a very nice person. But there are times this year, and we saw a little bit of it yesterday, where he can get a bit testy. I don't think he – and I don't blame him. I don't think he would want to go through that again. Just, you know, I mean, who doesn't want to coach in the NHL? But there's only so much you could take.
Hey, guys, the media's getting to him this year. I don't think the media got to him last year because there was so much winning.
Mm-hmm.
But remember earlier this year, PD, PD, PD. All you guys care about is PD. And then yesterday he had to go with Jeff Patterson. He had to deal with Miller's leave. He had to deal with Miller and Patterson. You know, that whole outside noise. The Canucks were a tire fire so
noise.
Many times this year.
Inside noise.
Yeah. Outside noise, too. I mean, the national media was all over Vancouver this year.
Man, you blame the media a lot for
stuff. I'm not blaming the media. I'm just telling you. I think the media is getting to them. There's no issues. And the other thing I want to talk to you guys about is the ownership plays a big role in signing a coach.
Yeah.
But I want you guys to look at what this owner is going through right now. The salary cap's going up, right? So you guys want the owner to spend to the cap, right? Because that's what he's done every year. And then you got dead money. You got $5 million in dead money next year because your management in the last two managements have made some bad mistakes in OEL and Mikheyev as well. So he's got dead money. He's got the cap going up, but you want him to spend to the cap. And then he's got bumps to Helvin and Rutherford in the last year. So I can see also, guys, why he doesn't think that he wants a $4 to $5 million coach. And maybe he wants a coach at a lower price. I don't
know.
That
doesn't count against the cap, though.
Isn't that just
coach? It doesn't, but it's still
Isn't that just penny wise, pound foolish, though? Right? Like if your management that you hired to run the hockey team is telling you this is our guy, and they went through a world of trouble to get him in, took a ton of bullets, and hey, this is the guy who's going to establish the culture. Yeah. Our franchise player loves him. You're going to quibble over a couple $1 million, giving him a raise a year for an NHL team like that. I get it, cap's going up and all that, but that's hard to swallow. I think that would be really hard to swallow for a lot of Canucks fans.
Especially given the Rogers news.
Yeah, that's right.
You're going to be okay making, what, you know, millions of dollars a year from the TV entities down south. I think they'll be okay. I mean, the cap considerations have to do with players.
The last
I think they'll be okay.
The last point I want to make. Okay. The last point I want to make about Tocchet is, and look, I get it. Jim Rutherford. I think if there's one thing we know about him, he's willing to play hardball. Right? He's not afraid of anything. So when Drantz reports and others report that, hey, we're willing to exercise our option and exercise our contractual rights and have Rick Tocchet back on the option next year, I don't think that's just a bluff. I think there's a real threat there. But I also think about what's the entire goal of next year. What's the most important thing about next season for the Canucks? It's convince Quinn Hughes to stay.
Keeping
it's put
Hughes
our best
happy.
Foot forward to court Quinn Hughes on a long-term extension. If you are in that weird of a situation with your coach, who Quinn Hughes happens to really like, that does not seem to square with the idea of, hey, we're doing everything we can to convince Quinn Hughes this is where he wants to spend, you know, the next 7 or 8 years of his hockey career. So I get it. Like, it's Jim Rutherford. Again, I wouldn't put it past him. He's not afraid to play hardball. But it seems to be really we're working very much at cross purposes with the idea of building confidence in Quinn Hughes or building Quinn Hughes's confidence in you as a franchise.
Yeah, and even if you sign Rick Tocchet to an extension, is the confidence still going to be there with Quinn Hughes, given what's happened this past year, the future like? The only thing that you know, and we talked about this a lot today, but, there's a few other things, but the one real positive this year is maybe he sees something with what's happening in Abbotsford. And all these young, Elias Pettersson looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay, so Lekkomäki, there's all sorts of promise there. So maybe that's something he can attach to and say, okay, I'm happy here. Rick Tocchet's sticking around. I'll sign. But there's not a whole lot else, Rick.
Yeah, no. And so what has Hughes told us in no uncertain terms in the last year? He loves Tocchet. He loves Besser.
Mm-hmm.
He loves Pettersson. Those are that's his group of guys, right? And the Besser, you guys talk about, you know, keeping Tocchet to keep Hughes happy. Well, you might have to keep Besser to keep Hughes happy too. You know, I don't know if Hughes is going to be doing cartwheels if Besser leaves, right? And, you know, so all these guys, we're starting to get into Quinn Hughes' head a little bit on, you know, what he needs as from an organizational. And when Chris Tanev left, guys, that was Chris Tanev played an important role for a young Quinn Hughes in Vancouver.
His partner.
It was his partner, and off the ice, they were tremendous friends. And that, like, Chris Tanev was a very important person for Quinn Hughes. And when Tanev became available at the trade deadline last year, Hughes did go to management and say, "Hey, you know what? If you guys can get Chris Tanev back, you know, do it." You know, I'm all for it. And the management did make a run at Chris Tanev, but they obviously didn't get him. But Quinn Hughes, you guys are right. Every single move they make has got to be with him in mind.
All right. A couple of forwards they missed over the last few games of that road trip. Nils Höglander, Elias Pettersson. We've seen Höglander skating in a non-contact jersey with the team the last couple of days. Pettersson not skating with the team. And, you know, I did find the update from Rick Tocchet on both players pretty interesting, especially the contrast between it, right? Where on Pettersson, it's, well,
yes,
you know, day to day, maybe expect him to play, but we'll see. Not really sure. And then on Höglander, it's, oh, that guy wants to play. That guy wants to play. And we just got to be careful we don't bring him back too early. But he's raring to go. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading between the lines, reading some subtext there. But it struck me how different those were. One guy, well, who knows? Some discomfort day to day. The other guy, oh, he definitely wants to play. Am I reading too much into those updates from Rick Tocchet?
No.
Well, we felt the same way, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the answers the questions were delivered back to back as he went through Hedl. The reporters went through Hedl, Hoglander, and Pettersson, so you couldn't help but notice the contrast. This guy is champing at the bit, whatever the phrase is, Hoglander, to get back in the National Hockey League action, and then Pettersson's day to day, something to the effect of I guess he could play, and that was a really, really stark contrast. It doesn't sound like Rick Tocchet is all that impressed by what. Again, I'm reading into things.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like he's all that impressed with what's going on with Elias Pettersson now.
Yeah, no, I think all of us are reading into it exactly. The quote was, when a guy's day-to-day, I expect him to play.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the quote. You're telling us that Hoglander is chomping at the bit to get back, but you're telling us on Pettersson, when a guy's day-to-day, I expect him to play. He's basically essentially telling you that Pettersson should be playing, is the way he's saying it. But, I don't know. A lot of people tell me that Elias Pettersson is just not a Rick Tocchet type guy. You look at the way Tocchet played the game.
Good Canadian kid.
Good. Rick Tocchet played the game where every coach loved him. He played an honest game. He never cheated on effort. Never cheated on anything. And I don't know what's going to – hey, by the way, I did hear that Pettersson was on the ice this morning. Before the Canucks, I think there's something, maybe an arm or wrist or something of that nature. But I was told he was on the ice before the rest of the Canucks.
Well, I think, and also too, guys, maybe this plays into it, and that's the time of the season, which was a song by the Zombies. But that's another that's another subject altogether. But the time of the season, like, in Rick Tocchet's day, and again, Rick and I are old, we're going down this road, and we apologize for that. We don't apologize for that. But look at how important the games are. I mean, you're trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And if he feels that, there's a chance Pettersson can play, I'm sure in the back of his mind he might be thinking, come on, get out there.
Season's on the line. Season's on the line. And go look at the first round of the NHL playoffs, guy. Go ahead, Thomas.
Is the season on the line? Season was on the line.
But you need your number one center right now. Two, it's not like you don't. Yeah, it would help. Would it not help, Thomas?
It would help, but I just think we're already at a point now where making the playoffs requires a miracle at this
point.
But
is that how the team is looking at it? That's what matters. Because you're right. But what matters is internally how the coach and the rest of the team view how they are approaching these games.
What I will say, too, is where I think this does matter. Like where what I do want to see over the balance of these next eight games, and I'm not counting on a miracle 7-1 run that is accompanied by the Wild or the Blues tripping up massively, and also the Flames and the Utah Hockey Club not catching the Canucks, because let's be real, they're all basically in the same boat at this point in the standings. I do want to see this club, like, even as the out-of-town scoreboard has sort of sealed their fate. And of course, those two losses against Columbus and Winnipeg over the weekend. Like, I've liked what I'm seeing in terms of this team's play. At the very least, I'd say they've gotten back to some of that, like, professionalism and consistency that characterized Tocchet's first 120 games with the Canucks, and not what we saw through November, December, and January. I do want to see that. And I do think it matters for Pettersson to be in the lineup from the perspective of this club just sort of turning the page on the inconsistency and sneering joylessness that became their identity over the course of, a season that I think is probably already squandered. Is that fair?
Yep.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fair.
There you go. Unanimous agreement.
But also, what about, I also playing into this, that, the time of the year.
Yeah.
It's a desperate situation, but that's when, great players come through. They're paying them a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's the reality, you've got an upper body injury. Can you help us out? Maybe that's going through their heads right now. I wouldn't be surprised.
And how many guys are not playing 100% right now, Thomas, around the league?
Well, that's where it matters.
Everyone's chipping in. Look at Kachuk in the
Quinn
US
Hughes.
Canada
well, yeah, I was going to say, not just the league, on the Canucks.
Yeah.
Quinn Hughes, Kevin Lankinen on the road trip in a tough spot. Yeah.
Yeah. Lankinen had a hip issue in New York. The guy suited up and played. Mm-hmm. you know, he suited up and played. And sometimes, you know, you want to see that, you know, anyways, you guys know where we're all going with this, but whatever.
Well said. Whatever. Pugh Suter. The price, I don't think, has gone down since the trade deadline. Is it out of Vancouver's range? Is there still a chance they circle back, as they say, at this time of year? What are you hearing, Rick?
Oh, 100% they're going to circle back and keep chipping away. After the trade deadline, they did contact his agent. And so what do you guys – here's the problem with Suter. Are you signing him as a second-line center?
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm concerned, your third-line center is Hedl. So are you –
maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we don't know that. We'll find out, you know, in training camp. But are you guys going to give him second-line center money? Because – you know, I don't see Sam Bennett coming here, guys. If he doesn't re-sign in Florida, I told you guys a few weeks ago that, you know, they're still talking. But I don't know. If you're willing to give Suter second-line center money, then go ahead and do it. But it's right now, they're going to have to do what they did with Lankinen and go to an uncomfortable number. And they're going to have to go to an uncomfortable number with Suter as well.
Yeah, and maybe like they have to make a comparison between, I don't know what you think about this, Thomas, but Brock Besser and Pugh Suter.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the plus minus is outdated, but minus 24 for Brock Besser, worst on the – I just wonder where they stand when it comes to Besser, who will command more money than Pugh Suter, who is a Swiss Army knife, can be played on the wing, penalty kill, at center, move into the top six, bottom six. Rick Tocchet's face lights up whenever he talks about the guy. I know he's not the one, you know, dealing with that contract, but I wouldn't be surprised if they pick Suter over Besser at this point.
Yeah, I think.
But then how do you replace Besser?
There you go. That's the problem, you know.
Pugh Suter can do a lot of stuff.
Have to go to the,
But he can't do Besser stuff on the power
and
play.
He can.
And is this a one-off season for him goal-scoring-wise?
Yeah.
Tough spot, boys. It's a tough spot.
They've got some big questions to answer coming up here in the offseason. One they've got to answer probably in the next couple of weeks here. We'll let you go on this one, Rick. Tom Volander in the Frozen Four, so pushes the timeline back a little bit. What are you hearing? I know you said earlier this week, could go back to school. What's your sense of where this is going with Tom Volander?
Well, I think there's an issue with the signing bonuses right now. The negotiations, they're up and down. The negotiations are up and down. He could go to Abbotsford. They could sign. I'm just telling you that the options are all there. You can go back to school if you want. You can sign with the Canucks. You can do an American Hockey League deal. You can do a lot of that stuff, right? So all those things are in play. But clearly there might be some issues with the bonus structure of the contract, and they'll continue to chip away at it. If they can get a deal done, do it. Get him in Vancouver. Get him in Abbotsford. You know, he's a big part of the future.
Yeah, and I think that is where it will go, but we'll see what transpires once his season wraps up. Fellas, thank you, as always, for doing this. Well, we've got one or two more left in the regular season, so we'll try to enjoy them. We'll chat next week. That is Rick Dhaliwal, Don Taylor, joining us for the crossover. And, of course, you can watch them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV on Donnie and Dolly. We will take a break here. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet on the other side as his team gets ready to host the Seattle Kraken. We can take more of your texts as well. A lot of texts coming in about Quinn Hughes and his role in the Canucks' future after that last segment that I want to dive into a little bit. So send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. More on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. She was a disco lover. Not what I expected to hear there coming in on this one. All right. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We're live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. RackSteel.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. So just before we hear from Rick Tocchet, his game day thoughts as his team takes on the Kraken tonight at Rogers Arena, we were talking in the crossover there about Rick Tocchet's future. And, you know, as we've heard, obviously Quinn Hughes very high on Rick Tocchet, and Rick Dhaliwal made the point like, well, hey, if you're trying to keep Quinn Hughes happy, I don't know if he's going to be happy if Brock Besser leaves. So maybe you have to do that as well, or you have to think, take serious second thoughts about trying to get that done as well. And we got a few texts in all kind of on the same theme, and I'll run through them here. Bill and Poco texts in, don't concentrate on Hughes, concentrate on winning and let that take care of Hughes. This one, listen, this is all too much. If Quinn Hughes is going to leave because a buddy or his coach is gone, he shouldn't be the captain of the org. Stop all this. And Sean in Campbell River says, who cares? Doesn't mean he won't love new players or coaches coming in as well. And I think there's a good point there, like, because I think everyone's on board for Operation Keep Quinn Hughes, an operation put your best foot forward and do whatever you can to convince him to stay. But there is a limit to, well, he's Quinn Hughes's friend and therefore he stays. Like, there has to be a limit, because at a certain point it's counterproductive. If you don't think that helps you put the best team on the ice, like, Quinn Hughes might love playing with Brock Besser, but if you think that cap space is spent better elsewhere, well, Quinn Hughes probably also really likes being on a competitive team that has a chance to win and that's going to go to the playoffs, right? So that, to me, should absolutely supersede who Quinn Hughes has a relationship with. I think it's a little different than the coach, because the coach is just so fundamental to the direction and the culture of the organization. So I think it's a little bit different there. But I get what people are saying. As much as you want to make it as positive an environment, as friendly an environment for the captain, for the best player, Quinn Hughes, there is a fine line, or at least a needle to be thread, I think, of making sure it's not counterproductive to the actual goal of winning as well.
So there's an old hockey bromide. Players play, coaches coach, managers manage.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you need to stay in your own lane to have a functional organization. And it's one I subscribe to an extent. I largely agree. I largely think there's wisdom there, that things can get complicated if, you know, we've seen it in Vancouver in the past. Mark Messier,
yes,
had an awful lot of say on roster decisions on and on, right? And that didn't work. We all know that. So, you know, I think there's wisdom to it. I think there's wisdom in that. And the other thing I think about is, you know, we've talked about it a lot. Like, you have to have some self-respect as an organization and set your own plan and set your own agenda and not worry that much about doing things for one guy. Like, that's the goal, is to win as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to be efficient as an organization. The goal is to find value as an organization, and players are pieces of that puzzle. They can't be, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. That said, the times, they are changing here, right? And they're changing fast, right? We're looking at what, 6-7 million in cap growth this year?
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, the year after that, beyond that, the year after that, and that's smoothed, right? Like, it could be a bigger jump this year if the PA and the NHL hadn't
if
they had agreed to avoid the 2016 NBA offseason cap shoots up massively. But, you know, beyond that, we don't really know. What we do know is that league revenues are about to explode. There's a fancy new TV deal that's just been agreed to. American rights are coming in higher now too. Like, there's stability on that front. We're probably getting expansion, right? One of the fault lines in the next labor negotiations might be, do players get a share of expansion? That,
right.
I'd imagine they'll push for that.
Yep.
And obviously, to get it, they'll probably have to sacrifice some team control and, you know, make it even harder to hit unrestricted free agency, on and on. And it's worth wrapping your head around what these changes could mean, because as the business side is rapidly entering a new era of growth, right? A new bear market for NHL cap spending. There's also something happening in the game itself, right? And we've talked about this a lot. Shooters are becoming more efficient. They have slowly begun to roll back the gains made by goaltenders across a generation post Patrick Roy and Francois Allaire coming up with the butterfly, right? We are, like, we are seeing it. How many nights are you watching games and thinking that team got goalied? Right? You're seeing it one of every three games, according to SportLogix data, where the goalie either blows up and significantly underperforms expected goals or vice versa, steals the result. Star players are deciding games. Like, go look at the best players in the league, and it's effectively like Quinn Hughes and David Pastrnak are like the only two elite blue chip guys who won't be in the playoffs this year for the most part, right? I mean, you'll have good players, guys like JT Miller and Larkin, you know, like that level of guy. But for the most part, like Kucherov's going to make it, McDavid's going to make it, McKinnon's going to make it, Makar's going to make it, Rantanen's going to make it.
Eichel.
Hellebuyck. Yeah. Eichel is such a good example. Barkov, right? More than ever. Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
More than ever. The top-end talent in this league are determining outcomes in a way that they arguably haven't since the 1980s, since Patrick Waugh used the butterfly and won the Stanley Cup in 86, right? Like, since then, shooters and skater talent, elite talent, are having a greater impact on outcomes than ever. These two forces now are moving at the same time. And to me, that creates ripe grounds for a level of player empowerment that we've previously never seen, or certainly haven't seen in the league in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And in that world, players play, coaches coach, managers manage. Do the lines blur? Do they have to? I think they might. Like, I really think they might. I think you get to a world where, much like in the NBA, you know, like Dwayne Wade won championship in 2006 as a true player, and then won two others where he was partly an executive because he recruited LeBron and Chris Bosh to play with him. Uh-huh. And you see that in the NBA. Like, people often say LeBron James, greatest player of all time, not the best
not
general
a great
manager.
GM. And that's kind of the point that right. I'm getting at here, right? Is like, there have been a lot of teams that LeBron James has been on that if they could have managed to be like, hey, LeBron, we appreciate your insight, we're not going to sign whoever. I can't think of the examples sure. now, but you know what I mean, right?
We're not going to do the Russell Westbrook trade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. But also, he still won a championship in LA.
It's true.
You know what I mean? Like, you're still better off with 38-year-old LeBron calling the shots badly than you are without 38-year-old LeBron being the Charlotte Hornets. You know, like, if you're making moves solely to appeal to Quinn Hughes, I think that's dangerous ground. But I'd still rather have Quinn Hughes and make mistakes to appeal to Quinn Hughes than not have Quinn Hughes, especially with the way the game is trending. Like, I think there's an argument that he's one of the four or five most impactful individual players in terms of the act of winning games in this league right now. And there's no way to replace that. There's no way to replace that. Like, look how dominant he's been at, I would say, 60%. Like, visibly in pain on the ice an awful lot of the time, and you're still getting performances out of him like the one they got in Manhattan, right? Where it's just like, oh my God, how many guys control games like this? McKinnon, McDavid, Dreisaitl, Kucherov,
yeah.
Quinn Hughes. You know, like, if you want to throw Barkov, Eichel, and Matthews on that list, sure, fine. But, like, that's the company. And so, I think there have been times in the past where I've been pretty stringent on the club being focused on doing the right thing and adding value and playing the efficiency game. And I think for the most part, that was right at the time, especially in the flat cap era, where I thought you could be more ruthless and still keep ground because all of these teams were going to be so flawed. What I'm worried about coming down the pike now is players, right, deciding collectively, not the PA, but groups of players, spheres of influence, deciding, hey, we want to play together, right? I want to play with my brother, right? So Brady Tkachuk, Quinn Hughes, right? It's not just Quinn that's going to be a major storyline on this score, right? There's also going to be a Brady Tkachuk story in the years ahead.
Yeah. Or, and, like, guy in 5 years, guys who played together on the U.S. National Development Team program or whatever, right? You know 100%. What I mean?
Let's get together. Let's get together where it's nice to live in a low tax state. You know what I mean? Or relatively low, or in Manhattan or wherever, right? Newark, but whatever. You can live in Manhattan. And let's do it this way. Let's do the Parise Ryan Suter thing, but in a world with 910 or 900 save percentage, we can actually pull it off, right? Like, mm-hmm. Now it'll work. This time it'll work. And they're probably right. And so I think that's, if that's where this is going, then where the sort of emphasis goes is less on being like efficient in terms of cap spending and more about building durable partnerships, right, with top end players who serve, at least from a player recruitment perspective, as like a functional arm of management, right? Like, part of the game isn't, it becomes not just can we keep Quinn Hughes, but can we keep Quinn Hughes and use him?
Yeah. Does he help us attract talent, other talent?
To add players, to further sort of our efforts to win games.
Because that's another big thing in the NBA, to draw that comparison, and, right? Is you got to get the first star to attract the second and third stars. And that's a huge, guys are like, well, I want to play with him. So all of a sudden, I'm willing to go to markets that I wouldn't have previously considered.
And in the NFL. I mean, look, the New England Patriots entered the offseason with oodles of cap space, right? Oodles. But A, none of the good wide receivers make it to free agency. B, they offered Chris Godwin like $40 million more than he signed for in Tampa Bay. He's coming off a serious injury. He's coming off a serious injury and he's 29. He's not even a perfect target. And he was like, nah, I'd rather leave a lot of money on the table to live in a low tax state where I'm comfortable and well established than go play in, you know, cold Massachusetts.
And in an uncertain situation, in a talent poor situation. That's right. The other part of it, right?
Yeah. Cap space only goes so far if you can't find people to take the money on offer, or if you can't find the players worth spending that cap space on. You know, we're about to enter an offseason where multiple bad teams have $30 million plus $40 million in cap space. And those teams, if they're going to land the guys they need or the guys they want, they're going to play a you suck tax. Right, like the we suck tax.
Mm-hmm.
The we suck tax is going to be paid out in reams by Chicago and San Jose and on and on. How do you compete with that? Right, like the dynamic is just about to shift, and in fact, it already has, and it's just that the way we talk about and think about these contracts and these numbers as they come in needs to change with it, and it's going to shift so quickly once we get to July 1, in my opinion. And it's just like, this is the dynamic change.
I totally see what you're saying about the value of Quinn Hughes. I'm on board with Operation Keep Quinn Hughes. And especially what you're saying about it's a partnership more than anything.
Yes.
More than it has been a siloed relationship in the past, right? Where it's like, hey, we're the management. We don't need to talk to you. You're the player. Go do your thing. We'll figure it out. It's a partnership. I get that. You still have to weigh, and especially in this situation where, because the partnership really kicks in when the long-term deal is signed. You know what I mean? The partnership doesn't just, like, it's one thing if Quinn Hughes and Brock Besser were UFAs at the same time, and Quinn Hughes is like, hey, I really want to come back, but I really want Brock with me. It's like, all right, we'll do that, because that's what's going to get your signature on paper. You have to wait. How much is this actually improving our chances? You know what I mean? It's great for Quinn Hughes to be friends with a player. Is that seriously moving the needle for you to keep him in Vancouver?
Right.
And that's where I think the coaching thing is different, because I do think that's like a really significant part of the player's experience.
That comes down to trust. Like, I trust this guy to maximize what we are. I trust this guy to improve me.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And, like, he's going to set the whole tone for everything. Like, that's just such an important position. I think that matters really significantly.
And by the way, I don't know that I've ever covered a more thoughtful, cerebral athlete. If Hughes tells you you've got the right coach, I would wait that far. Like,
yeah.
That to me matters.
That's huge.
That to me matters more than his like player takes. And I'm sure his player takes are great. I mean, I've never really gotten into it with him, but like that matters more to me than the player takes, because he's had a lot of coaches. He's had a lot of different styles of coaches. I think he knows, you know, I think if he believes that firmly in this coaching staff, that's all you need to know, really. So yeah, more than anything, it's like, I see where you're saying, but I just think we need to rapidly shift our brains from thinking about value from a like player efficiency standpoint only,
mm-hmm.
and instead move into this world where like What's the phrase I've often used? It's a scarce resource management environment because of the cap space, right? And in a world where cap space regularly goes up, the scarce resource flips from being cap space to being talent.
To good players.
To being talent.
Yeah.
And in that shift, like, I just think that shift is so massive in terms of shaping how we think about team building strategies and the decisions that teams make. And adds a significant amount of like heft to the influence of top talent and the importance of building a partnership with that talent on multiple fronts in retaining them.
I again totally understand. It's hard for the partnership thing to fully kick in though until the player is on a long-term extension, right? Because then you're always going to be wondering, well, are we making these moves to appease you and get you on the long-term deal? And that's fine. And if it works out, that's great. But with the uncertainty, if you're making deals on players you don't fully believe in and Quinn Hughes leaves anyways, you know what I mean? Like that's a risk that I think does have to be grappled with here. And that's why, again, I think it really matters. You got to, and this is tough, as Rick said earlier on the show, right? Like we're getting into Quinn Hughes's head and the management has to get into Quinn Hughes's head a little bit here as well. Like, yeah, you can have the conversations, but it's not like you're going to go to him and be like, how much less likely are you to leave if we sign Brock Besser? You know what I mean? Like that conversation is not going to happen, I don't think, in those frank terms. But you have to try to judge how much it matters.
Yeah, but you more than anything, you have to have buy-in on your plan. You're not selling a star player on we are going to do this specific contract. You're selling them on a vision and direction for the franchise. That's the sales pitch. That's the covenant that you look to build with a star here. And yeah, it's look, the implications of this are massive, and let's get into it with Books on the other side.
All right, we will take a break here. As mentioned, Jason Buchla from Sportsnet and former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's Canucks game day. We will do the whiteboard, and we didn't end up having a chance to hear from Rick Tocchet in that last segment, so we'll try to play the Tocchet audio from today when we do the whiteboard in the final segment. But of course, right now, joining us as he always does at this time on a Wednesday from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he's our pal Jason Buchla. Books, what's going on?
Well, I'm just surviving, this beautiful weather in Ontario, ice and rain and, you know, everything else. Brutal.
But
brutal.
I'll tell you what, Books, you arrive at Sportsnet a few years ago, and then look today. We signed the big 12-year deal with the NHL, and I got to think those two things are connected, man. You helped us get this over the finish line.
Let's just say that it had absolutely nothing to do with me and my maybe my salary is saving the company money. Maybe that's how they found the extra.
Yeah, I know what you mean there, Felix. I know what you mean.
Hey, you always got to have good talent on ELCs, Books.
Or in the minor league system, however way you want to look at it, right? It's great. I love it.
So, Books, I want to talk to you about what remains of this Canucks season. There's 8 games left. Their playoff odds are bad. I feel relatively comfortable saying something like it requires a miracle for the Canucks to make the playoffs at this point. What do you want to see from this group with the time that remains to them?
Well, it is time for a serious discussion here. You know, just I want to see the character and the push through right till the end. It's been a trying season. There's been a lot of distraction. There's been a lot going on. It's been endless conversation that the three of us have had forever now. And now, you know, it's surrounding the coach, and that's no surprise. That was going to sneak up on on everybody anyways. But honestly, I just want to see everybody. I think you guys have heard me say it before. Part of scouting players is the easy days are when they go off and they play with a high degree of skill and they perform at a level that, you know, you can project and say, wow, that's really elite. And I'm really hoping that, you know, 70-80% of the time we can get that. But perhaps the other 20% is the hardest to figure out. And that is, on your worst days, what can you provide to the franchise to put us in a position to be the best version of ourselves as a team at that time? And I do mean that seriously. You know, Drancer, people probably get tired of it, but you sat in the meetings with me before, and, you know, those are some of the things that I'm always wondering, because your A game isn't always there, so you're going to have that B game in reserve to push the team to be the best they can be on that day. And that's what I'm looking for from the Vancouver Canucks right now. They're not all playing at the best version of themselves. You got a goalie still coming back off of injury. You got guys that are out with injury, maybe coming back, maybe not. You've got maybe Tom Willander. Does he come out? Like, there's lots of noise around it. So whatever it is, when you strap on the blades and put on the jersey, whatever you got to give that day, give every ounce of yourself and tell me something about you down the stretch.
How much do front offices weigh these types of games where, okay, your playoff push likely fell, came up short, but as you said, there's still a chance for you to go and show and, you know, put everything out there on the ice. And for a team like the Canucks, you know, they could be looking at some pretty substantial changes in the summer. We'll see exactly what that looks like, but I think there's a lot on the table as far as changes go for the Canucks. How much do these games matter when management's trying to decide, okay, who can we count on? Who do we want here long term? Who do we maybe want to move on from?
For me personally, in my experience, it means a lot. I mean, right till the end of the year, right to the last whistle, you can't afford to take half a day off, take your foot off the gas for whatever it is. And yeah, your motivation might wane, especially if you, like, let's be honest, tonight's game 7, right? Like, this is overtime before it even starts. So the next 3 games, they got to run the table, I think, 7-1 at the worst. And it's going to tell me a lot. I'm going to have a takeaway, because if you can't give the fan base and the organization, while you're cashing checks, everything you have till the very last day, then that speaks to your character and your resolve. And yes, things haven't gone your way, and yes, the things haven't gone the way for the group, but it's pro sports, and you got to take a lot of pride in that, and you better give everything you have right to the end, because my takeaway will leave an even worse taste in my mouth when you start competing for a job as we start to kind of restructure the group here.
Does it matter even more, given that I think we can fairly say that, you know, a lack of consistency and effort dogged this team all season? Given that, does it matter even more that they finished the season strong?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I think you're being kind when you say that a lack of consistency. And, you know, there's two different ends of the spectrum there, isn't there? Like, because, you know, we talked about the Patterson situation, you know, obviously went through the JT Miller. But then at the other end of it, if I'm putting on the jersey and I'm looking across the room at Quinn Hughes, who's absolutely given everything he's had on a nightly basis, played through injury, et cetera, I got to be the best version of myself as a good teammate for my captain as well. So, yeah, it means a lot. And it's gonna tell me a lot about where they're at culture-wise. And it's fractured, let's be honest. We all read that. We know that. You know, if the coach is coming back, I think he's going to have a lot of say in what he believes needs to be resolved here in the off season. And, you know, one of them is the no trade, obviously, with your one of your supposed best players and the risk that's involved in that. It's a long-winded answer, but, as a teammate, I'm giving everything I have for everybody in that room right till the end.
So, Books, we were talking in the last segment about changes in the game, and we've been so obsessed as like a hockey commentariat with this idea of cap space, of how limited it is, right? You know, good player signs to long-term deal. Like, what about the risk? Can they afford to sign Zach Hyman even though he's really good, right? And now, with, you know, this Rogers deal further cementing it, but 3 years of predictable cap growth coming up, the Chychrun deal standing out to me as something of a canary in the coal mine here too, it sort of feels like we're entering this new phase where the scarce resource to be, you know, super protective of isn't necessarily the cap space, but the talent, like elite talent in this league is sort of what's going to matter the most here. Do you see it that way?
I see it a lot of different ways. There's a lot for me to unpack with the strategy going forward. And I really do believe that on balance that the league, every team is going to start to structure things a lot differently. You're going to see some teams that are going to be lopsided with what you describe as high-end talent, and there's going to be significant dollars spent on those players, especially with the cap going where it's going. But then you're also going to have that team that really relies on the draft and develop model, the insulating with a certain player type that's an affordable type. I'm not talking cheap, but affordable player type that plays to the identity and culture that the organization has developed, like the identity of the organization. There's going to be a lot of moving parts here. And, you know, I hate to use a baseball comparison, but you might get into that, you know, that Tampa Bay Ray type of scenario where they're at the bottom, which is the floor. But, you know, because of their draft and development model is so good, they're going to be competitive enough. And then you're going to have that high-end team, i.e. the Toronto Maple Leafs, maybe the Vancouver Canucks, you know, the Montreal Canadiens, the New York Rangers, who are going to be like the New York Yankees. They're going to spend, they're going to take more risk with the dollars that are available to them, which is going to mask their deficiencies, if they have any, in draft and development. So there's a lot that's going to go on and a lot of strategies that are going to change here in the next few years. It's going to be kind of fascinating to watch it unfold.
One other change that's sort of happening concurrent with this new era of cap growth, the growth era, let's call it that. One other change that we're seeing, Books, is, you know, goalies aren't stopping 91-92% of shots anymore. They're stopping 90%,
right?
And what you're seeing now is guys like, you know, a Quinn Hughes or a Nathan MacKinnon or a Connor McDavid, obviously, Leon Draisaitl, the best of the best, feel like they have a greater impact on outcomes than ever before. I mean, what was a more NBA-style run through the playoffs than what McDavid did last spring, right? Like, how many times are you entering a Game 7 and being like, well, what's really going to matter is this third line with Ruslan Fedotenko on it is really, like, you're looking for the best players to make the difference. Who made the difference? It was Reinhardt. It was the 50-goal scorer that determined. So concurrent with this, you've got this moment where, like, star players in some ways feel more impactful and valuable than ever. How do you sort of grapple with that? And its implications from a team-building perspective.
So if we want to use that right there as an example, you know, again, this is where so many layers as we peel back the onion here, and I know the league doesn't like for me to talk about it, but it's a reality. Even with the cap going up, like when the cap goes to where it's about to go, and you have certain teams in certain markets in the NHL, and taxation is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to tell you that you're gonna see a guy take $10 million to play in Florida. That's the equivalent of $12.5 million to play somewhere else. You know, in Toronto, for example, or $13 million to play in Toronto when you factor in taxation, cost of living, yada yada, all these types of things. So there's going to be an imbalance, a built-in imbalance in the league when it's in relation to the cap right there. Like right there, that's not the same. It's not apples to apples. The other argument, though, that I would make is this, that the smarter GMs, the smarter teams. Now, what Bill Zito's done in Florida is a little bit different. He's insulated the upper level with some really good pickups on the waiver wire or through trade, like the middle-of-the-road type of people. But the teams that have the most savvy that way, they're going to hit on more players. Vancouver's done a great job of it, let's be honest, there too. Like, Keeper Sherwood, like, I have no idea how the Nashville Predators let this guy get away. I have no idea. That's a great example. But you're going to have to hit on more of those types of players to insulate your upper level, especially as if you choose, you're going to put all your eggs in those baskets to get to the cap with that star group of maybe five players.
And one of the things Drance and I were talking about in our previous segment was, look, we all know the Canucks are going all out trying to keep Quinn Hughes happy, trying to keep Quinn Hughes around long term. But as important as the star player talent is at the NHL level now, and we all know how good Quinn Hughes is, how careful do you have to be that you don't go a little too far, right? That you still have to make sure you're doing moves that are best for the team on the ice and not just to, you know, keep Quinn Hughes happy in the moment when you make the deal.
I'm keeping Quinn Hughes happy no matter what. I'm taking the other. I'm going the other way.
This guy, fair enough.
I'm going the other way. So I don't know that everybody has a value to the franchise. And Connor McDavid's of the world and the Draisaitls of the world, they make X number of dollars and they have a certain value. Quinn Hughes, when he was out of the lineup, to me, it just exposed that he could be the most. He could arguably, with their argument could be made, a very strong one, that he's the most valuable player in the league, because the Vancouver Canucks were a shell of themselves. They've dealt with all these other distractions and injuries, but when he was out of the lineup, this team was a shell of themselves. I'm not fearful about I don't know what the overpay would be. I don't know what that is. I'm keeping this guy for as long as I can, as long as he wants to be there, and I'm building around him. I just have to get more creative somewhere else in my lineup because he's that important to me.
Yeah, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
So one,
you're never going to get a guy like that back again. Honestly, like when are you ever going to get another Quinn Hughes?
It's
only
a great
took 50
question.
Years. Only took 50 years for this franchise to find a defenseman like this. So,
well, how many come around in the NHL as a whole that often? Right? It does not happen very often. One of the maybe silver linings recently for the Canucks, Books, has been, you know, as much as their playoff chances have basically dwindled and gone to zero here, they have had a chance to look at a bunch of AHL players in the lineup. Now, some of these guys had been up playing games earlier in the season as well, but, you know, Atu Ratu, Linus Karlsson, Lekkomäki, Nils Åman, Elias Pettersson on the back end, Mancini for a few games. What stood out to you about that kind of group of Abbotsford players that have come up over the last week or so and done their best for the Canucks in tough circumstances?
Yeah, tough circumstances for sure. The trajectory for some of those guys hasn't changed a lot for me. I still believe that, you know, the Nils Åman of the world, Atu Ratu, like he's got a role when the team is rolling in the bottom there to play a certain style. The beginning of the year, I liked them. He broke training camp playing heavy hard on pucks, and it wasn't sustainable necessarily, but it's fine. You know, at the top with Lekkomäki and Pettersson, those guys are my, you know, A-grade type of prospects still that are going to be able to insulate the group moving forward on lower-end money. I have to be honest, like Mancini, I still think he's a 7 or 8. I really do. I'm not going to, you know, roll out the red carpet yet, but I actually think he's been capable. He's done a pretty good job. But again, he needs to show, like, hopefully they go back down to Abbotsford, they have a good playoff run, and they get some leather under their skin that way. But we'll see. Two guys move the needle more than the other is what I'm trying to say. So
yeah,
they're part of the discussion, but not the solution.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Another storyline to follow late in the season here for the Canucks is what eventually happens with Tom Volander when his season ends. Boston University in the Frozen Four, so we'll see when his season does wrap up. Just from your perspective, you know, because it would be rushed, but there would still probably be a chance for him to get in, maybe play the last game of the season for the Canucks, burn that year of his ELC. Then obviously he's not eligible to play in the Calder Cup playoffs with Abbotsford, or he could go to the AHL right away and have a chance to be a part of that run. From an organization's perspective and your perspective as a former scout and a former front office member, what are the benefits to the AHL route for a player like Volander specifically?
Huge benefit. I would really, selfishly, I would really like to talk him into a PTO, you know, and have that kick in next year. That would selfishly be, for me as an organizational strategy, the best. And I actually believe it would be the best for him too. I don't know. I'm not so much sold on the burning of a year being as important to the process now as it was when the cap was at like $82 million. And like with where everything's going right now, I don't know that getting there that extra year quicker is, I guess on balance, it could mean something, but I don't know that it means quite as much. If you're good enough, you're going to get paid anyways, and there's going to be enough to go around for everybody. And these guys are getting extended after year number two. If you're really good, like you go into the summer of your ELC deal, and you're going to get a deal in the drawer. I'd like to see him go to the American League is my long answer. I'd like to see him weather the storm down there and add a layer to their depth, ideally. I just, like, honestly, Vancouver, by the time he plays in the Final Four here, the Frozen Four guys, the Canucks will be in or out. You'll already have that answer. So is it really worth that game? To me, it's not. So go down to the American League on the PTO and let's get started next year. The biggest fear, of course, is he balks at that and he says, well, not only am I not doing A or B, I'm going back to BU for another year. And I don't like that when guys go back in the junior year. I just feel like I'm starting to lose a little bit of control of the situation.
Yeah, and what else does he have to learn? You know, like what else
nothing
is there to
there.
What else is there to do down there? Go play in the AHL and let's see how you can hack it in tough minutes. Like that's
I agree with that. So that's exactly it, isn't it? So for the one game, maybe this is the strategy. Here's the discussion that I think the three of us would agree. Okay, Tom, I know you want to be in the NHL. You're going to be in the NHL. Hopefully you're going to play way more than one game next year. And I understand the strategy. It's to burn a year. But for your professional development, just think how much better a player you're going to be if you go to the American League now, earn this type of experience that otherwise you might be not be able to earn. You're going to be way better come next year. You're going to get where you want to go with your salary quicker anyways just by being a better player when you break camp next year. So I think we would all agree with that.
Yeah, and by being more likely to make the roster game one because you've got 12 games of NHL experience in the Calder or AHL experience in the Calder Cup playoffs as opposed to 12 minutes in the NHL in a meaningless game toward the end of the season. My guess is this one gets sorted and he ends up signing and starting in the American League with the Canucks, giving up a little bit on the bonuses. Like that seems pretty straightforward to me, Books, and that's how I'd expect it to unfold despite some elbows that may get thrown as negotiations proceed, which so often happens. Hey, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. I'm curious to get your take on it. The notion of this Canucks team entering another all-in season, another all-in summer, right? Operation Keep Quinn Hughes is what we've dubbed it on this program, right?
Yeah.
How careful should the Canucks be about, while going for it and trying to get back to contending the way they intended to this year, also being mindful of doing so in a way that should the Hughes situation unfold the way they don't want it to, they can quickly pivot and not set the franchise back several years. Like how should the club balance that in your view?
Well, it's not an exact science just because of so much, like there's so much to unpack there. I think you just, again, I'll go back to my entire the Hughes scenario. A, you want to make sure that he's happy. So by doing, the happiest he's going to be is by knowing that you guys are all in as a franchise, that you're pushing the envelope, that this was an anomaly, this was a one-off, you're not going to return to the same form you were a couple of years ago, that you know you're going to continue to springboard forward. I think that I do believe that despite everything that's gone wrong this year, it could have been far, far worse than it ends up being here. I really believe that. And so if the coach comes back and he recognizes that, because I'm sure he has confidence in that, by all accounts, this team really likes playing for this coaching staff. So the coach is going to be part of that too. Like, let's keep going forward here. This was an anomaly. This was a hiccup. You're going to have to take the risk. That's that's my long answer. You're going to have to take the risk. And I think it's important for everybody, including the fan base, to know that that you're going to keep pushing forward here, because this group's still pretty good, guys. It's just got to figure a few things out right now.
Books, I'm going to majorly put you on the spot here, but we've heard a lot from Canucks management, from the coach, that they're going to have a big sit down with Elias Pettersson after the season, try to figure out where things are going and make a decision one way or another before his no trade clause kicks in on July 1st. With everything we've seen unfold with Elias Pettersson, you know, in the last, I don't know, 14 months now, really 14, 15 months we're up to at this point, would you, like, how difficult a decision would that be for you? Is there one way where it clearly points, or is it almost a coin flip? Do you keep him or do you trade him for you?
I got to be honest, guys, right now I'm moving off of him.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a, I'm not in the room. I read body language. I read results. And I'm not talking about a segment of 20 games. You know how we like to talk about segments. We're talking a long period of time here. And yes, he's injured now, but It's just there's a huge disconnect. Something doesn't fit. Something doesn't feel right. The downside of it is it's going to be depressed value on the return in the marketplace. But the upside is that it should open up dollars to be spent more wisely somewhere else. And hopefully that's what they do. They strategize those dollars to be spent on the type of player that that they covet. Right now, too much for me to unpack, too much disconnect. It just doesn't feel good to me. It feels like I need a change.
Books, great stuff. As always, we really appreciate it, and we will do this again next week.
Awesome, boys. Look forward to it. Thanks. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, our pleasure as always. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and, of course, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL as well. We'll take one final break here. It is the whiteboard coming up next, and we will hear from Rick Tocchet, his game day comments to the media as well as part of the whiteboard here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.